Would you like to be able to start conversations like a pro? Take the Sunday World, your daily dose of what's going on. Do not consume the Sunday World if you're involved in a drug cartel, you're a politician with something to hide, or you've appeared on a reality TV show and care about others' opinions. Consume the Sunday World responsibly. Always read the stories, gossip, and commentary.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
We're back on the road this April with our live show, Cocaine Cowboys. If you want to hear the story of Ireland's love affair with Colombian powder and those who made millions in the gold rush, join us in Galway's Town Hall Theatre on Saturday, 6th of April, Killarney's INEC on Saturday, the 13th of April.
Tickets for Belfast's show have sold out on Ticketmaster.ie, but limited availability remains at ulsterhall.co.uk. That's ulsterhall.co.uk.
Given, obviously, that this has been going on in the background, it's been quite a job that he's done keeping it from everyone within the party, because they were completely as shocked as the rest of us. You know, from the reaction, they were stunned, they were shocked. Jeffrey Donaldson, regardless of what happens, and we know that the legal process will take its course, but regardless of what happens, I'm pretty sure as we're sitting here today, his career is over. You know, his political career, let's face it, is over.
I'm Nicola Tallant, and you're listening to Crime World, a podcast about criminals, drugs and the sins of the underworld in Ireland and across the globe.
The leader of the DUP, Jeffrey Donaldson, sensationally resigned after being charged with historical sex offences. Today, we talk with Belfast Telegraph crime correspondent Alison Morris about the unlikely chain of events that made Good Friday an extraordinary news day. This is Crime World, a podcast from SundayWorld.com. Alison, an enormous story breaking in the north of Ireland today. We're going to be careful about what we report around this, but nonetheless, Jeffrey Donaldson has resigned as DUP leader after being charged with historical sex offences.
Astonishing. I mean, today, we're sitting here, it's Good Friday. You know, the biggest story to ever come out, I suppose, of this part of the world is the Good Friday Agreement. I thought today would have been a nice, easy day's work running into the Easter holidays. And then this is story, and it's probably, I mean, it's the biggest story of this year, if not this decade. Jeffrey Donaldson, a huge figure within unionism, you know, a complete titan within unionism, the leader of the DUP, an MP for Lagan Valley. And rumours that he was the person. Police had put out a statement last night saying that a 61-year-old man and a 57-year-old woman had been charged in relation to non-recent sex abuse cases. The woman has been charged with aiding and abetting. To be clear, she's not charged with any kind of sexual offence. She's charged with aiding and abetting an offence. And there was rumours that this was Jeffrey Donaldson. That was confirmed today beyond any reasonable doubt when the DUP themselves, we were told, the jungle drums were telling me that the DUP party officers had all received messages calling them to an emergency meeting. That emergency meeting went on for several hours. And at the end of that, they released a statement saying that he was resigning with immediate effect.
Of course, like, he has actually been charged, hasn't he, Alison? Like, he hasn't actually appeared in court. That's coming up later this month. But
it's what's called a 28-day charge. So you're charged to court to appear in 28 days from now. So the he will appear at near the end of April in the Magistrates Court in Newry, both himself and his co-accused. And at that point in time, then there will be a plea hearing, and then it would be sent to the Crown Court for trial. So, you know, our legal system is incredibly slow. He'll make his first appearance in April the 24th, Newry Magistrates Court. And after that, then there'd be a series of other smaller hearings, and then it will be sent to the higher court, to the Crown Court, we would imagine then for a full trial. This depends obviously on pleas and all sorts of other things that, you know, we're speculating on at this point in time. But yeah, and our legal system runs quite slow. So this could, you know, could take a year to come to trial, maybe even more.
So, and what of Jeffrey Donaldson up until today, his image and the kind of character he came across as, and has been, you know, he's been lauded essentially as being a pretty clean cut guy.
I mean, 24 hours ago, Jeffrey Donaldson was heading towards retirement in the House of Lords. He would have been sitting on the benches of the Lords. He would have seen out his retirement there in a very cushy existence. He would have been known, he's staunchly unionist. He's, you know, a member of the Orange Order. And he would be considered, you know, of that sort of very socially conservative wing of unionism. You know, there was no hint of any kind of, I suppose, any of these kind of allegations around him before. That's why it all came as such a surprise to everybody. And in terms of his career, he was right now, he was at the height, I suppose, of his career in terms of how things were going. He had went back, he'd managed to get the British government and the EU to renegotiate the Brexit deal. He had went back again and had more changes made to that, albeit people would argue he made claims that he had removed the sea border, and that is not the case. But he did manage to get that deal past his party officers. He got the assembly restored. That was a big issue. It'd been over 2 years. There'd been no government and things were functioning nicely. You know, we had all these nice images of our First Minister, Michelle O'Neill, and Deputy First Minister, Emma Little Pengelly, who's a very, very close friend and ally of Jeffrey Donaldson, out and about together, you know, up playing camogie on a pitch, and then Michelle O'Neill going to the Shankill with Emma Pengelly. Everything seemed to have been going well. And in terms of his career, he was probably at the height of his powers. And then for it all to come crashing down in such a dramatic fashion, you know, and it really has been a dramatic few hours. You know, every journalist in Northern Ireland has just been flat out working on this story. You know, newsrooms are in complete disarray. And you'll be unsurprised to know that our lawyers are all earning their money today.
I mean, he was during the Belfast Agreement, he was maybe part of the hardline faction, like, you know, on Good Friday, that wouldn't sign up really. He was in the UUP at that stage. But all these years later, he kind of had his moment where he was kind of very much lauded. He had a recent speech in the House of Commons where that sort of civil society were embracing him really at this stage.
And he's sort of more middle ground as opposed to...
He had become middle ground, but he started off as a kind of a hard line voice in the UUP.
Yeah, he was a defector from the UUP. So he left the Ulster Unionist Party in protest at the Good Friday Agreement, along with Arlene Foster. They defected at the same time. Both went on to lead the DUP. The DUP, when Arlene Foster, then there was, when she left that post, there was actually, the party actually elected Edwin Pouts to the job as party leader. He lasted a very brief length of time. I think I remember saying one time that I had a bottle of shampoo that I'd bought and it had lasted longer than Edwin Pouts's leadership. And so Jeffrey Donaldson came the city, grew through to leader, but he adapted into that role with great ease. You know, he really did. He clearly wanted that role. It was something that he had wanted his legacy to show. He wanted to restore the assembly. Now, he stood on those hardline Brexit platforms alongside people like Jim Allister in protest at the sea border. He collapsed the assembly because of the DUP's opposition to the sea border and the Brexit arrangements. And he maintained that sort of hardline stance up until the point where I would say he would have been probably one of the more forward-thinking members of the DUP in terms of his politics, when he realised that if you want to preserve Northern Ireland as part of the union, making it an ungovernable political basket case probably isn't the best way to go about it. And so he did a job of work. I mean, some will say he maybe hoodwinked some of the members of the DUP into believing this deal had achieved something that it hadn't. But regardless of that, things seem to have been ticking along quite nicely, even those really opposed to him within the DUP. And we're talking like people like Sammy Wilson and Ian Paisley in Westminster. They weren't making that much noise. They were saying, you know, well, like, this deal doesn't deliver everything it's promised. They weren't calling for him to resign. They weren't attacking him. There was no motions of, you know, of no confidence in him. There was nothing like that happening. So he would have, I suppose, been thinking this is, you know, a free run till the general election expected to take place, you know, sometime later this year. And his Leggan Valley seat, albeit his vote has been reducing gradually over the years, is a fairly safe DUP seat. or it was at least. You know,
I mean, it must put the DUP under huge pressure now at this stage, because Conofy had that authority that you spoke about, that even if people disagreed with him on the sea border, they didn't launch personal attacks, and that kind of held the DUP together. I mean, it must be now they must be really thrown into a state of chaos.
They must be reeling.
Well, yeah, there's some will be reeling, and some will be very upset, and some will probably be secretly quite pleased that they will now be able to assert their views within that, those sort of hardliner views. Now, no one, at the end of this, and I have to say that all the other politicians and political leaders, including Sinn Féin, the Ulster Unionists, everyone else, they've put out very brief statements. Obviously, everyone has to be legally very carefully, but they're all saying, you know, this is a legal process now, let the legal process take its course. And at some point, you know, there is people, you know, actual real people's lives at the centre of this. But politically, if you move away from that, you know, there's people who didn't want this deal to go ahead. They didn't particularly want the assembly restored. And their views, I suppose, they were trying to keep quiet. They were keeping their powder dry. Now there's an opportunity for them to try and start moving themselves in, get someone who is more of their line of way of thinking into that leadership position, pull the DUP back over again towards the hard line. And that is where they would feel more comfortable. You know, these are people who would feel more comfortable in the TUV, which is that really radical, you know, super right wing, conservative breakaway group, if you like, run by Jim Allister. But they knew they would never get elected under a TUV ticket. So they've remained in the DUP, albeit they're the hardliners. And this is a perfect opportunity, I suppose, for them to very quietly start moving themselves back in to positions of influence. And, you know, Geoffrey Donaldson, regardless of what happens, and we know that the legal process will take its course, but regardless of what happens, I'm pretty sure as we're sitting here today, his career is over. You know, his political career, let's face it, is over. As a person, I don't know, you know, where he ever goes from this, but I do, you know, we can pretty be sure that the Geoffrey Donaldson time in the DUP and his reign in the DUP is completely over. And the statement that they released, the DUP, they, you know, I thought that I was shocked at the wording of it, because at that point in time, no one had definitively linked him to these allegations, and they basically did. And that was it. You know, all speculation was over then.
And really, that's why, you know, that his name and the headlines started, and obviously the flood of media that came in, it's because they confirmed it, because up to that point, nobody was in a position. There was text flying around our phones, and you said yours has been hopping since last night, but like, it is quite peculiar. Was it purposefully done, do you think, or was it something that they possibly misunderstood?
No, I don't think there's been a misunderstanding. There's an awful lot of lawyers in the DUP, you know, an awful lot of their politicians are former lawyers and barristers. So I don't think that it was done by accident. It was done pretty much on purpose. And the wording of that, you know, it left, I suppose, us as journalists, no doubt that this had to be reported in this way. You have to report that statement. You can't not report that statement in that fashion. And that, you know, I do think that that shows that the DUP, far from giving him any kind of cover or saying, you know, well, we'll put out a one-line statement saying you've resigned, which they could have done. They could have just said, Geoffrey Donaldson stepped down as party leader. We won't be commenting anymore because of, you know, legal implications, and let it go at that. But the fact that they extended that, I think it shows that there are some people within that party officer team specifically who thought, well, this is our chance. Get rid of him and then let's see. And so there is an interim leader who has been put in, who's Gavin Robinson, and he is also quite moderate. He's of that very moderate wing of the DUP, I suppose, if you can ever say the DUP are moderate. You know, they're hardline unionists, but he, I suppose, would be of the more middle ground. Will he want that job? I don't think he does. He's never given any indication that he wants to be party leader. So then it's down to who else wants to step in and take that job.
And I mean, all of this happened pretty quickly. There's no suggestion that the DUP were aware of any investigation going on, because of course, you know, you don't just land charges on somebody. There's obviously, you know, a case has been built, which Geoffrey Donaldson will in the future be able to plead guilty or not guilty to, and whatever, which way that goes. I'm trying to think if
I can tell you, in the DUP knew that this was going to happen, because I went through every contact that I had, and they were actually messaging me, asking me for information. Nobody knew. All that we knew, that yesterday, that Geoffrey Donaldson cleared his diary yesterday. That's all we know. He was meant to speak at DUP breakfast, business breakfast with some business leaders, and he cancelled that and someone else stood in place of him. He was meant to do a pre-recorded interview with the BBC, which would have went out today, and he cancelled that. Nobody knew why. There was, you know, there was no reason given. And then last night, then the police released a statement saying the two people, a man and a woman, had been charged in relation to these non-recent, as they call them, offences. And then obviously, as of this morning, emergency DUP meeting, all hell breaking loose, and then a statement from the DUP. And that's pretty much the sort of lane that we've been following. That's pretty much how the chain of events unfolded.
And I suppose put our crime hats on for a minute and take the political ones off. But, you know, again, to come to a position that somebody's charged before the courts, they have more than likely been arrested and quizzed in relation to, you know, allegations have been put to them in, under arrest, which could have been something that happened, you know, months ago.
Yeah, I mean, it could have been under, we don't know the exact date of the complaint. I have asked the police to give me the exact wording of the charges, because that could maybe help us try and work that out. The PPS will review this. So the police charge you to court, and this wasn't by way of a PPS summons. So you would assume then he has been into the police station yesterday, been charged with this, and then they are released and given a date to appear in court. That's usually how these things work. With historic cases like this, those non-recent cases, and often it'll be by pre-arranged interview. You know, it'll not be the police coming around at 7 a.m. kicking your door in. It will be by arrangement with a solicitor rather than that. But I mean, it given obviously that this has been going on in the background, it's been quite a job that he's done keeping it from everyone within the party, because they were completely as shocked as the rest of us were this morning. And I know that. I know this isn't people just, you know, telling me one thing when they know something else or speaking out of both sides of their mouth. I know from the reaction to people that I was speaking
they were
to
stunned.
DUP, that they were stunned, they were shocked.
I mean, I think from the position of the DUP, if somebody is the leader of your party and they're facing charges of this nature, and even if they have a sort of anonymity under, you know, a legal sort of anonymity, they were probably in a position where it's quite unsustainable when it's the public know it anyway. Yeah. And maybe they felt that you can't have somebody, a public figure like that. Yeah. It is different than a... Yeah.
But sure, when I was coming in earlier after speaking to you and to you in relation to it, I was coming in and listening to the news, and top of the news was, you know, an unnamed man in the north. I mean, this is down here. Two people had been charged in relation to historical sex abuse. And then the next story was the story, I think it might have been reported in your own Belfast Telegraph, that he had deleted all his social media accounts some days previous. Yeah. So these two stories were sort of hanging. Of course, you know, I knew the situation because I'd been speaking to you guys, but you'd wonder, like, at that point, everything was disjointed until the DUP statement brought it all together.
Yeah. I mean, Alison will tell you more about the laws that have come in the north about naming sex offenders. They're different than we have now. There's been a series of judgments in English courts around privacy and also laws that have been brought in the north. So it could have been a situation where, in this case, Jeffrey Donaldson would never have been named. It would have been absolutely illegal to be named, and he could have been effectively the leader of the country.
Mm-hmm. I was going to ask you, maybe you don't know, but I'll ask you anyway. You know, we've spoken about his political career. Do we know anything about his personal life? Is he a married man? Is he a family man? Or what, you know?
Yeah, he is married with children, and he is someone who he always came across as, you know, he would give the impression of someone who was a very sort of socially conservative family man. He's from quite a large family. And I've actually had conversations long in the past with him about this, because obviously the tradition in the past would have been for Catholic families, especially in the 50s, 60s and 70s, have quite large families and lots of children, and for Protestant families to be very small, whereas Jeffrey Donaldson has quite a large family. He has, I think, something like seven brothers and sisters. Or there are seven of them in the family. But he would have came across as that, you know, very, very, as you said, very unionist, someone who left the party in protest at David Trimble's decision to go in to sign the Good Friday Agreement. And then obviously after St Andrews, the DUP went in, he was, I suppose, a very loyal supporter then of Ian Paisley and Peter Robinson. And he's someone who's seen as a sort of calm head, you know, someone who would be, I think that the British government found him a lot easier maybe to negotiate with than some other members of the DUP. And that, I mean, the thing that I suppose that struck me today, and leaving aside all of these things, and we know that's terrible, and we have to bear in mind the sensitivities of what exactly it is that he's being accused of. He was literally at the height of his political powers. You know, he was safely elected into Lagan Valley. Whether or not he was going to stand an election in the next election, or then he was going to be boxed off with a seat in the House of Lords, which is where most DUP leaders or ex-leaders find themselves. But there was a plan in place, clearly a future plan in place for what he's going to do. And as of now, that is all in tatters. Mm-hmm. You know, no matter what happens, and we know this, no matter what happens, there's no recovery from something like this. And that is why that emergency meeting of the DUP party officers, that resignation and that statement all has came so quickly. There's no dilly-dallying around here. You know, there's no let's take a bit of time and see what happens. This all happened very quickly this morning.
I mean, it'll be strange as well for him to, you know, within his community, as you say, this case could take a long time to meander its way through the courts. You know,
he remains an MP in the House of Commons and all of those.
That's the next big thing that'll be a question. What is going to happen with his MP seat? Surely, if he's resigned as leader of the DUP, can he still maintain that MP seat? Will he have to then stand down from that as well? You would imagine he would have to give up that seat. That is probably maybe a story for another day, and how we will hear from him, I don't know, and what form we will hear from that, I really don't know. But it does seem that it would be impossible for him to continue on as an MP, albeit there's an election coming soon, and he would have had to make a decision whether to stand or not then. But you know, they are all the follow-up questions that are going to come. What is going to happen next? What is going to happen with that Westminster seat? Who then is going to replace him? And also then, I mean, if we're to go completely into the political sphere, something like this damages not just one person, but the whole of unionism as a whole, and the DUP certainly will suffer. And in this election, they are under real pressure from the Alliance, from that middle ground, which has just been mopping up those softer unionist votes for years. Election upon election, they make gains. And they were really targeting Geoffrey Donaldson's Lagan Valley seat. Saoirse Eastwood, who is the Alliance Party representative there, she has really raised her profile and increased her vote dramatically in the last election. And she really has her eye on the prize in terms of that seat. We also have the person who is now standing in for Geoffrey Donaldson now is gone, Gavin Robinson. He's under real pressure in East Belfast from the Alliance Party leader Naomi Long. So, you know, this, let's face it, it's not going to be good for your electoral prospects, is it, something like this happening? And, you know, the winners of that, I suppose, if there is an electoral decline and people either choose not to vote for the DUP or just not to come out and vote at all, but then what you can see is that middle ground taking up all those softer votes and taking those seats from the DUP, which, you know, that would be seismic. Geoffrey Donaldson once had the safest of safe seats. He's been the MP for Lagan Valley for as long as I can remember. And for that then to go out of DUP hands and fall into Alliance hands. And like, we're really jumping ahead of ourselves now, because she was quite some distance off that, but she has been making headway. Saoirse Eastwood, in terms of that, you know, they could lose their seats because of this. Mm. And that once a seat changes hands like that into a softer party, it rarely goes back to the hard line again. You know, once it's gone, it's gone.
For sure. I mean, between the three of us, can anybody think of, you know, a sitting politician, a party leader who before has been brought before the courts?
No, I mean, rare, and
not even just on these particular charges, but on any criminal charges. Can you think of anybody that was?
I mean, it's in terms of here, it generally is unprecedented. And let's face it, we don't have particularly normal politics here anyway, at the best of times. But even in that respect, it's been, you know, it's been a day where most people who have been messaged me have just been going, what on earth? You know, what on earth has happened?
I think as well, in Geoffrey Donaldson's persona, like, there's been a lot of very brash politicians, obviously, up the north on all sides of the spectrum, and, you know, very kind of wild characters, even beyond any paramilitarism or anything like that.
Yeah.
But Geoffrey Donaldson really was the opposite to that, like a very sort of mild-mannered, sort of Christian
straight-laced
guy, very much so. And I think that adds to the shock, because even his manner, that kind of soft-spoken and, you know, an intelligent guy, clearly, it just adds to the shock, where, just wasn't that type of persona, you know. And obviously he's an innocent man, absolutely, and that's been set out that he's you know, we haven't heard him plea or make any comment on it at all. But I just think that the public perception of him adds to some of the shock.
I hope you weren't.
I don't even know why it slipped my mind, but in terms of someone who obviously fell on their sword because of allegations about their personal life, the famous Iris Robinson story when she was revealed to have been having an affair with a very young man, and that ended her political career as well at that time. But I mean, I suppose it's just, you know, Iris always would have been considered someone who had a bit of an edge to her, and, you know, it didn't particularly surprise a lot of people, whereas this, you know, as you say, the persona is of someone incredibly straight-laced, you know, very sort of church-going, you know, straight down the line unionist. And yeah, I suppose that all adds the shock of it. But I mean, I don't think anything can make it more shocking. It's just been one of those days where, you know, every time I answer my phone, it's, you know, another journalist, what is going on? You know, what's happened?
Yeah.
It's definitely one of those days.
I was going to say to you, had you plans for the Easter weekend? Were you going to, you know, take yourself off to the couch, nibble some chocolate and watch a movie?
There is not, I'm going to say there's not a child washed in this house. There is not a thing done. This was the day I was going to go and buy my shopping and my dinner. There'd be not a potato on a plate come Easter Sunday. I have nothing done, and I don't think I'm going to get anything done for the rest of this day anyway.
So, I wouldn't have thought so. I mean, it's going to be busy, you know.
It's just, you know, and so many queries from so many people. And obviously as well, it's a story that has so much sensitivity around it too, that, you know, we're treading so carefully, and rightly so. You know, you have to remember there are real people's lives here. But it's one of those stories that, you know, not even in terms of how we had to handle it this morning, and in terms of even the media law and what we've talked about that goes around it, like I have said to people on the phone today, they will be teaching this in media law classes, in journalism classes, you know, for decades to come. This will be used as an example of how would you have handled this? How would you report this? And what does the law say? Because, you know, it is a legal minefield as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Did you get any Easter eggs?
I've bought any or received any.
No, did give you one?
Oh, nobody gives me any.
My mother gave me one. A Munchies. You know, those
my mom will give me one now, I have to say. She
it's pathetic though, isn't it? You know, well, at our age in life, wanting an Easter egg. And
well, I can't believe that your mom's are buying his Easter eggs at your age. Do you know what I did? My mother gave Easter eggs to mine for, and I ate two of them, so I had to go out and buy another two and replace them.
But you know, there's actually, you'd be lucky to get an Easter egg now today.
We should really.
I didn't get nothing. I am sitting here, as I told you, there's nothing done. Anyway, we'll see.
There's none left. In the
Yeah, there's a drought.
Ah, stop.
I'm telling you.
I'm going to have a panic attack now.
Well, you get the cheaper ones.
I'll be walking around supermarkets at midnight tonight to get stopped by every wee bitty on the way down to ask me what on earth's going on in the DUP.
And to buy your leg of lamb. Isn't that what everybody eats on Easter Sunday? Yeah. Anyway, happy Easter. Enjoy the rest of it. I'm sure you're not going to get much time off, but thanks a million for coming on. And definitely, you are the expert on Jeffrey Donaldson, his background. And, you know, it's one story, isn't it, where your political and your crime two genres are meeting, colliding, literally.
I just didn't expect them to collide in this way. And that's the thing. Nobody expected this. But we'll see.
All right. Thanks a million, Alison.
Thanks, Alison.
No bother.
You've been listening to Crime World, a podcast from SundayWorld.com, produced by Ian Mullaney and edited by me, Nicola Tallant. Research assistant is Chloe Domini. If you like this show and love true crime, leave us a review, or why not download the free SundayWorld.com app for lots more stories from Ireland and across the globe.
Would you like to be able to start conversations like a pro? Take the Sunday World, your daily dose of what's going on. Do not consume the Sunday World if you're involved in a drug cartel, you're a politician with something to hide, or you've appeared on a reality TV show and care about others' opinions. Consume the Sunday World responsibly. Always read the stories, gossip, and commentary.